Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Jennifer Ashdown. 19 years of combination experience, lieutenant with Effingham County Fire Rescue in Georgia on Engine 9. Jennifer never grew up dreaming of becoming a firefighter. She was a medical assistant in the oncology research department. One day while hanging with a friend, she ran a call involving a child. After the call was over, one of the captains who responded asked her if she ever thought about joining the fire department. Fast forward to today, when you hear Jennifer talk, you can tell how switching over to the fire service was one of the best decisions she made in her life. Jennifer doesn't like to talk about herself, and I can truly respect that, but she makes valid points on the topics we discussed, and I hope you all can enjoy the conversation. With that, I present Jennifer Ashdown.
I'm Jennifer Ashdown, Lieutenant for Effingham County Fire Rescue. We're a combination department. I've been with them for a total of 19 years. I did 7 years as a volunteer at Clio Station 1. Been career for right at 12. A lieutenant on Engine 9. I actually am a lieutenant for two stations, Station 9 and 5, so take care of both of those stations. It's kind of funny how I got in the fire service. Never thought about being a firefighter. Didn't know anything about it. Just didn't have any knowledge of that. So actually, I ran a call with a friend on July 4th. It was a child drowning. And just happened to run the call with them. I happened to be with them when the call went out. And end up actually getting there and doing hands-on CPR, things like that. So after the event was over, I was approached by the captain, and he's like, hey, don't you want to join the department? You know, be a part of this all the time? And I was like, what do you mean join the department? I don't know anything about being a firefighter. He's like, well, we'll train you. We'll teach you. And so we had a conversation, and we decided I would join. And I really just joined for the medical side of things. My background is in healthcare. I used to do oncology research, worked as a medical assistant for a long time. So really, I joined for the medical side of things and the medical calls. Had no interest in being a firefighter. So anyway, rocked on. I joined, got into the recruit program. At that time, the volunteers did, you know, the recruit program was 2 days a week, so on and so forth. So we got to the part where it was time to do live burns. And the chief at the time was like, yeah, I really was just going to do Mod 1 medical stuff, right? And so he was like, I think you really just try to do the live burn. So if you decide to, you know, be a full-time firefighter or whatever, you'll be good. So anyway, they put me in the gear, put me in the building. I was super nervous, had no idea what I was getting myself into. Got that nozzle in my hand, opened it up, sprayed water, and that was it. I was hooked. So started doing more live fire training, that kind of stuff. And just my love and passion for the fire service just grew. And so after about 7 years of that, we had a full-time opening. So the chief was like, I want you to put in for this job. And I was like, nah, I don't think I can do it. So anyway, he called me. He said, if you don't put an application in for this, I'm going to do it for you and just sign your name. And I was like, okay, all right, I'll do it. And so anyway, I got the interview, went out, was super nervous. When I passed the little physical agility that we have to do and all that good stuff. And I was like, there's no way they're going to pick me over the guys, you know, because there was a couple guys that applied also. Well, I got a phone call. Hey, you got the job. We want to offer it to you. When can you start? And I was just kind of like, oh, wow. So anyway, I left my career in oncology research and became a full-time firefighter. And here we are. Been the best decision of my life. And everybody says it's the best job in the world. And it is. I've grown tremendously since that time. Put a lot of work in, a lot of training. I got promoted to lieutenant after 6 years being career. So now I'm a live fire instructor. I teach hazmat, do all the things. I love all of it. I think hazmat's probably my favorite in live fire. But yeah, here we are.
Okay. A couple of things that definitely are different from other conversations I've had. You said you got into the fire service for the medical side.
I did.
A lot of other people are going to be like, no, we don't like the medical calls. We like the
fire. And now I am an advanced EMT, but we're fire only here. We don't do fire EMS. Oh. So I don't ride an ambulance or anything like that. And I'd much rather be on the engine. There's no way I'd ride an ambulance. I don't have any interest in that. I do like medical stuff and I'm a trauma junkie, but my passion is for fire. And so that's kind of what I want to do is what I'm doing. Okay. Living my best life. I love it.
Okay. I'm assuming you left a pretty good career, and I'm not saying being a firefighter is a bad career, but what I'm saying is, like, I'm sure you left a pretty a pretty decent salary to kind of come into the fire service.
I did. I took a pay cut, but as firefighters, we make it work. We pick up extra jobs. I'm a hustler. I have, three or four jobs right now. I stay busy. I make it work. And so when you do something that you truly love, you're not really working. And so,
Right.
and I learned a long time ago that money is not everything. It certainly helps and you got to live. But, we work a 24, 48 schedule. So I work other jobs. I work at the racetrack on the crash truck. I own my own business, Hook and Ladder Cheesecakes. So I'm busy with that. Selling cheesecakes. I actually sell cakes to a local restaurant. They're on the menu. And so I'm an adjunct instructor for the fire academy and I help teach hazmat for them. So I stay busy and make it work.
Okay. For those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us about your department? The size, personnel, things like that. It doesn't have to be exact.
Yeah, so we're a combination apartment, and man, we have grown tremendously over the last 5 years. When I first came on career in 2013, 2012, we had four stations that were manned with one person at each station to cover 475 square miles. And
Wow.
so I worked by myself for the first 3 years of my career here. So, gosh, we have hired so many people lately. We have somewhere around 90 full-time staff members. We've put on, gosh, probably, I don't even know how many recruit classes in the last several years. It's been a lot. We are just cranking them out. Our area has grown tremendously. A lot of industry coming in, commercial and as well as residential. So, we got to have the staffing. We have 17 stations. We staff 9 of those currently full time, with plans to open a couple more within the next year or so. So, and it'll eventually be where we'll have them all open. We are just the It's just exploding here with the growth.
Right.
So it's super exciting that I came in with the department was we had maybe four or five full-time people when I joined as a volunteer. And when I joined career-wise, we had, like I said, the four people, four stations, and we have just grown tremendously. And it's super exciting to see and be a part of the growth and to be able to help teach the new folks and new recruits and it's just super exciting. I'm super proud of this department, how far we've come in the time that I've been here.
Okay. Now, out of all the stations that you man, what's your minimum staffing like?
Most of them have two. One station has three, and then our headquarters station has five. They have a captain, a lieutenant, and three firefighters. Most of the other stations have either two firefighters or a lieutenant and a firefighter. So, I told you I'm a lieutenant for two stations. So there's myself and my driver at my station. And then station five that I also supervise only has two firefighters. So it just kind of depends on the area and the need. At my station, we only have an engine and a QRV. All the other stations have an engine and a tanker and a QRV. So our tower is currently out of service. We've got one on order. So we should be adding a couple towers and more engines in the next couple of years. So,
Was it difficult when back in the day when your stations only had one? Like, how was that for you coming in career-wise, being the only person at the station on duty?
it was very difficult because, like I said, I came from the volunteer side, and on the volunteer side, I mostly drove a tanker. I mostly shuttled water. I had the fire one cert, and all the things, but that's just not something that I did. I didn't make entry very much. I had, but not a lot. So there was a lot I had to learn, and a lot of people said, it's different going from volunteer to career. Well, I didn't believe that, so I got on the floor and I was like, oh yeah, this is different. You get a call in the middle of the night, you have to get up and get on the engine and get on scene, and you got to do your 360. You got to lay hose. You got to do all the things by yourself until somebody shows up. And so luckily we don't have to do that anymore. But yeah, it's difficult. We make it work. I go to classes at the academy or other places with big city fire departments, and they're like, you do what with how many people? They can't wrap their head around what we do. So
And how close is your nearest station, to help support you?
everything was in was is in within 5 miles of each other. So
Okay.
depending on traffic, time of day, that kind of stuff determines how quickly they can get to us. But you can be on scene for 5 minutes, upwards of 10 minutes, depending if that next due engine is out on a medical call and we have to get the next due in. So it's a lot to do.
Yeah,
So
I bet.
we do a lot of drafting here, and that's our bread and butter here. So, and like I said, we just make it work. We have to. We don't have any choice.
That's something that's a skill that sadly I'm fortunate the organization I work for, we have hydrants, but there are some areas where, we cover that don't have hydrants. But as far as drafting, that's a lost art. And, if you don't do it enough, you lose it.
Yeah, and I actually teach that. My captain calls it Lieutenant Ashdown Drafting and Driving School. They'll send
Okay.
the new guys down to me on my end of the county, and so we'll draft, and I enjoy it. I think it's fun. But we're starting to get more hydrants as we're building more residential areas here, and we do have a fair amount of hydrants, but a lot of them are not, they're orange tops or red tops, so they don't really put out a lot. So if you get a really involved fire, they're not really that good. So we may tag a hydrant and set up a draft. So it just kind of depends.
Okay. And on a residential structural box, what is your first alarm assignment consist of with your department?
So if it's me and my second dude, so it'll be my engine, and then the next dude will bring a engine and a tanker, and then usually a third dude will bring an engine and a tanker, depending on if it's the hydrant situation. So we do have some small residential areas that have no hydrants, which is wild to me that you would build a little subdivision with no water access, but
Right.
we have those. So everything's kind of case by case, call by call,
Okay.
really. I mean, as far as, and everybody knows the area and kind of when to roll what.
Okay.
And typically, we tend to roll more than is needed, which I'd much rather do that. I can send them
Yeah.
back if I don't need them.
Yeah. Okay. And do you have any sort of like battalion chief on duty, or I'm sure during the day you're fire chief or something like that?
Yeah, so we don't have battalion chiefs right now. That's in the budget for this next year. So we have the big chief and Chief One, the assistant chief, and then we have three shift captains, and then lieutenants. So my captain is actually stationed on the North Battalion. I'm on the South Battalion, so I never even see him unless we get something, pretty involved. So, and he'll come to us. So,
Okay. Now, how long did you stay a firefighter before you even decided to promote? And was that a choice by you, or was it a growing pain situation with a lot of departments where it's like, hey, you've been here a long time, we need you to step up? Or was it something that you wanted to do?
no, it was something that I wanted to do. And actually, the first time that I applied for a lieutenant's position, I had probably only been on the floor maybe 3 years. Really wasn't ready, and I knew that, but I just wanted the experience of it, to see what it was all about, the questions, that kind of stuff. And then years later, when we had the growing pains that we were starting to add more lieutenants and that kind of stuff. I was ready at that point, and so I applied, did the interview, all that. We promoted six lieutenants that round, and I scored number 7 out of the 15 that applied. So, and I was good with that because the guys got promoted, were all jam up, they earned it, that kind of stuff. And I was proud of how I scored and where I scored at. And so we had a captain that left. So one of the lieutenants got bumped to captain. So I was afforded that next lieutenant spot. So,
Okay.
and I did sit for the captain's interview, 2 years ago, a year ago, somewhere around in there, and I was not promoted, but that's okay. I got the experience of that, so that promotional process was a little bit different than the lieutenant's process. So, and I'll buy for the next one if it comes around. So.
Okay. And I'm assuming coming up within your department, was there anybody that you kind of aligned with or guided to kind of help you see things along the way? Because you've mentioned earlier you've grown up a lot since back in the day, which I hope we all do, but was there any particular individual or individuals that kind of helped shape and mold you?
So I have a lot of those folks. Mentors are so important in the fire service and actually just everyday life. But in-house, Lieutenant Connor, he's relieves me in the mornings. He came to us from a larger department that had been doing things a little differently than we had. They had grown, and were doing the things that we were trying to do. And so we talk about things all the time. He's taught me so much. I teach pump ops with him. I bounce stuff off of him every morning. And what I really like about Lieutenant Connor is he'll be like, "Well, you're wrong, and let me tell you why." And so I like that. He's not afraid to tell me, "Well, no, that's not right. And here's how you need to do things, or you're thinking about it in the wrong way. And let me show you why." And I love that about him. He's very patient, he's just a great teacher. And then I have a lot of have a couple women mentors, some guys at other departments that I talk to all the time. That's probably been the best thing about training outside of your own department. I'm very pro for that. I think people don't, in my department, don't do that enough, because I have met some tremendous people, some amazing people that I can call and be like, hey, what do you think about this? Or, hey, can you send me an SOP on so and so? Or, hey, I had this call and I want to bounce it off of you. Like, even instructors out at CertC, where I did my hazmat stuff at, I have their phone numbers and I can call them and ask them questions, and then they love that stuff. So I think that's terrific. So
That was definitely one of the topics we're going to hit on, and you've pretty much stated your piece on it, how important and vital getting outside the four walls of your department is. And I'm assuming that, with you traveling around the country, taking different classes, you've learned a lot by talking to other people. Because like the thing with firefighters is, we may think that the way we do something or we have it worse than others, but when you get outside your four walls and listen to, hey, this is how we do things, you start to realize like, hey, maybe we're not as bad as I thought.
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You talk to guys from other departments, and pretty much everybody has the same kind of issues. They might be a little bit different, but one, everybody's having the same issues. And so you kind of can learn that and talk through some of those things. Like, if I'm having a problem with a firefighter, I just want an outside opinion. I can be like, hey, what do you think about this? And so, they'll guide me or whatever. I'm like, hey, we're having the same kind of thing go on. So I love that. And then I've just learned so much about, fire operations and fire tactics and things like that, just by going to classes and meeting people from bigger departments that do things different. And I tell my recruits all the time, get outside this department. Now, I'm not saying my department is bad training. Don't misconstrue that. We have a jam up facility here, but it's just different going to other departments, and you make connections and resources and lifelong friends that you can, like, I have some female firefighters that I hang out with. We'll meet up and do a girls' day or whatever, and so that's kind of nice. So you just learn so much that you can bring back to your own department. Maybe resources that we don't have here, and that kind of stuff. I went to a conference in Myrtle Beach a couple weeks ago. Met a fella who's a distributor or whatever. He's actually sending me a hen nozzle so we can do some training with the hen nozzle. Wouldn't have got that opportunity had I not went out to this conference. And so I'm super excited about that, to bring that back to my department and see, how that goes and train with it, something different. So maybe the chief will like it and get on board. We'll see.
No, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's that exposure, it's that putting yourself out there. So some firefighters tend to shy away from that, but then too, I also have stated, your department, it's not always up to your department to send you places. Sometimes you have to take that initiative and pay out of your own way to get there.
And I do that all the time. I pay for stuff all the time. I'll go and spend my own money and take my own vehicle and all those things. And I'm good with that. Some of the guys here don't want to do that, and they think the department should send them. But you got to understand budgets and financial constraints and things like that. If you want to grow, you got to be able to put the work in and go. I mean, there's no other way around it.
Definitely. I am kind of intrigued on a couple of things. So you teach drafting. Is that something that has always intrigued you, pump ops, or was it like, what is it behind your love of drafting and hazmat? Because those definitely, especially the hazmat topic, that's not very popular in the fire service.
So as far as the drafting goes, when I became a volunteer, like, I was up on the North Battalion, which is very rural. So drafting was our bread and butter. It's what we did. Like, you had no other water sources. And so I learned that. And it wasn't until Lieutenant Connor, my little mentor, came on, and actually learned so much from him about how the pumps work and things like that. So I'm not a mechanical mind. Like, I can't see things, like, and he just has a really good way of teaching it. And so, I don't know, I started teaching pump ops with him, and I just really like it. I just like hands-on stuff to begin with. But it's nice to take the recruits out, and when they first catch the draft the first time, and, like, their face lights up, like, I got it, especially if they've been struggling a little bit, and to see them, that knowledge, like, the light come on, I got it, I got it. So, and I like that. So hazmat, I haven't always liked hazmat. I'm always looking for a way to grow, and so whether I like something or not, I'm going to try it and just see. If I can, if I'm good at it, if I'm not good at it, the answer is always no if you don't ever ask, right? If you don't ever try. So I'm always putting myself out there, making myself uncomfortable so I can grow. And so I did a hazmat tech class actually here at my department years ago. Didn't like it, passed class or whatever, not a big deal. And then a lot of the guys were going out to CERTSI out in Colorado to take tech classes and, the things that they offer out there. And I was, well, I think I want to do that. So I went out there, and I don't know if you've ever been out there. I don't know anything about CERTSI. It is amazing hands-on. They have all of the equipment. You're climbing all over rail cars and putting your hands on stuff for 2 weeks. And it was just, I just fell in love with it. It was amazing. So came back here. We started growing and doing more and teaching more in-house classes. So I started teaching hazmat here, or the ops and awareness level. And I like to do experiments so I can intrigue students and keep them active. No one likes death by PowerPoint.
Yes,
So I think
yes.
that's a lot of the hazmat problem is people just don't like it because it's death by PowerPoint. Well, I get them out of the seats and we go outside and we do experiments and we mix chemicals and make little explosions and whatever. And they like that. So it gets them interested. And so I just Chris Whitehead at the Georgia Fire Academy had reached out to me. Hey, well, since you teach hazmat, are you interested in helping teach tech up here? So I went up, signed a contract with them to become an adjunct instructor. Help teach a hazmat tech class. So I'm actually trying to get a tech class here at our department with all the growth in this industry that we've had. We don't have a lot of techs, and so the need is there. So I'd like to bring that knowledge here and help our department grow some in that area.
Okay, it's fantastic. It's that, like I said, it's definitely the topic, but you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned death by PowerPoint. And but that's the thing, it's like hazmat's not really sexy, but it's intriguing because like there are so many things out there you would be surprise that travels up and down your interstates and your
Oh, absolutely.
highways, and you're like, oh, and it's like, yes, this reaction is water. This, like, so it's one of the topics. It's not popular, but it's definitely needed for sure.
Well, I make the class sexy, so it's a lot of fun.
All right.
My class
All
is fun.
right.
I make the class fun.
Okay. All right. And we need that, but the thing is, you realize it because I've been to a couple conferences where like the presenter will just sit there and click and read it like word for word. And you're like, oh my God, this is not. And it's like an hour presentation of 45 minute and you're struggling because it's like, bro, come
And
on
I don't
now.
think people really learn well from that.
That's
I'm
right.
a stone learner. I can't read something and pick it up. I have to do it and put my hands on it, and probably more than once or twice. I always tell my recruits, there's no growth without failure. Well, you're not going to fail if you don't put your hands on it. So you have to learn to do it. And so, yeah, we do all kind of fun experiments to make it interesting. And that hones in the concept that you're teaching. It helps them learn so much better reading it.
Okay. I have heard of CERTSI because our hazmat team, they go out there a lot. I think they also go to New Mexico for the bombing or whatever. I haven't been there. One place when I was on the ha I call myself a has been. I'm not on has anymore, so I'm a has been. But I went to Anniston for I think a week or 4 or 5 days, and that was really interesting on domestic terrorism, the stuff they show you, they teach you. It really was wild.
Yeah, I haven't been to Anniston. I've been to New Mexico Tech for the bomb class, but Las Vegas for the CTOS radiation class. That's on my bucket list. And I would like to go to Anniston as well.
Okay, awesome, awesome. Now, I didn't ask you, Effingham County, what major cities do you are surrounded by you?
So we are right outside of Savannah.
Okay. There is a possibility of you having to go in there or them coming in, right? Depending
Well,
on the situation.
so Savannah Fire is a much larger department than ours, and
Right.
they have a dedicated hazmat team.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so we probably would never go to them, but they would, we could definitely have them to come out to us. So
Okay. Okay.
we
Now, have
actually
you?
had a methyl bromide incident last year with a fatality. Not cool that somebody died, but the chief called me en route and it's like, hey, that's going to be ammonia. I'm like, no, sir, that's going to be a pesticide. And I couldn't remember the name of the chemical, but I knew it was a pesticide because I take my crews out there into these facilities and we tour them all the time so that we know if we get an incident, where everything's at, what chemicals there are, basically pre-planned stuff, right? And so I was able to get there, get everything set up. We didn't have to do a bunch of research because we already knew. So
Okay.
getting outside and getting those pre-plans done paid off.
If you don't know what's in your first do, like you're doing yourself and your crew an injustice because there's nothing worse than arriving on scene to something in your area and they're like, hey, this is what we have, and no worse feeling than knowing to yourself, like, we have never been here and this is in our own area. Like, how does this work?
And it's not a really good feeling until the chief, hey, you're wrong, but kind of was necessary at that point.
Right. I mean, because, and that's the thing, you spoke up, and I'm sure he appreciated it because you don't want to go, yeah, that's what it is, knowing full well that's not what it is and could cause an even bigger issue.
Yeah, so he pulled me aside and said, hey, good job. I'm proud of you guys. You guys are getting out here and doing the training and putting the work in, and it paid off. So.
Now, with you being a lieutenant, my question to you is, what does leadership look like? What kind of leader did you want to become?
So I think we've all had bad leaders. And so you learn just as much from a bad leader as you do a good leader. And so I never wanted to be that sit on the couch, hey, give out orders. And that's just not me in general. I'm a very much lead from the front. If I'm giving the guys an assignment, I'm right there with them. I'm doing it, hands on. I don't sit back and just watch them, Now, with that being said, as I've gotten a little bit older, I do let the young guys do a little bit more than, I'm not always like training, for instance. I'm very pro giving the guys an opportunity to grow and learn, and that's what we do as lieutenants, right? We gotta groom them for their promotion. But I'll let them run training. Hey, what do you guys want to train on today? Okay, they'll throw some topics out. Okay, you're teaching today, and they love that. It gives them buy-in. It makes them feel important, and their opinion matters, and they love it. So. For leaders to just sit back and just bark orders and just sit on the couch or not be out there washing trucks with the guys, don't like that, and I don't lead that way.
And with your station, the way you guys are set up, do you kind of get together with other crews somewhere in the middle and kind of get group training
Oh,
together?
absolutely. So every shift, me and So my station 9 and station 5 get together, whether it's at my station, their station, or so last shift we met up at a warehouse and laid some LDH and did some training, commercial ops stuff. So yeah, we get together almost every shift.
Okay. What does the term aggressive mean to you?
Well, to me, aggressive can mean a couple different things. As far as, firefighting and operations, getting in there quick, knocking fire down, making decisions quick, not hanging back. Are not going in, well, there's too much fire. We don't want to go in. That's not what we do. You gotta get in there and get the job done. Aggressive was training, training every shift, and effective training, not just tabletop stuff. And there's nothing wrong with doing some tabletops because I like to do that sometimes, especially if it's raining or, it's super hot outside or whatever. We'll do a tabletop, but then the next time we'll do the hands-on with it or, that kind of stuff. So aggressive can mean a couple different things as far as that goes.
And I love how you mentioned that because, some firefighters, when they think of training, it's, oh my God, it's hot. We got to have to wear. And that's the thing I tell others, like, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to get out in all your PPE and SCBA. There's a time and a place where, like you said, tabletop, even just driving to areas in your district and go, okay, if this house is on fire, how are we going to do this? Or where's the next water supply for this subdivision? There's so many different aspects of training that, officers can do for their firefighters. It's like not even funny. There should be no reason why it's like, well, we don't do any training when there's so many things you can do out there.
Sure, we do that all the time. We'll be out driving and see like a subdivision going up. We'll get out and walk in, look at the construction, talk about things, that kind of stuff. There's so much you can do. And like you said, you don't have to be when it's 110 degrees out there full gear. I mean, you got to be heat acclimated. It's like last shift when we did the commercial training, we did head, hands, and feet. We didn't do jackets and air packs because it was so hot. But just kind of we let the weather kind of dictate what we're doing a little bit. But you got to be uncomfortable a little bit too. So you can be prepared, ready. Like especially at the fire academy doing live fire stuff, you can always tell when the students come, they never get in their turnout gear because they're comfortable and they're struggling and they're sucking the cylinders down. And then you got the guys that show up that are, the studs that you can tell they train in their gear and they're getting in their gear. You can tell. And I teach my recruits that when they get on the floor to get in their gear and do something every day, whether it's wash a truck, you can throw an air pack on a wash truck, and we do that all the time. there's ways to keep yourself acclimated and accustomed to the gear, but it'll tell on you if you're not.
That's right. And I can say that's one idea I've not heard of, but it makes sense. It's not everybody loves gear workouts. I get it. But it's very vital because, like you said, your body gets acclimated to that uncomfortableness, that heat trap, just kind of pushing through that mental grind. But washing a truck with an air pack or putting on gear, that I mean, that's pretty good too.
Yeah, I mean, whatever it takes to get your body used to breathing the air and wearing that mask. Some people struggle with that, especially if they have for a long time. But even our own department, we'll have a structure fire and you'll see guys show up and they're struggling because they don't ever get in the gear. I do have a recruit and he's out here teaching today. He actually got promoted to lieutenant. I taught him when he was a recruit, but he's now a lieutenant and he's out here today teaching. But he said, the one thing that I took away from you, so I take something away from every instructor I've ever had. And the one thing that I took away from you was to get in my gear every shift. And he does it, and you can tell. And so, a little proud moment for me right there. So,
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, we always say you want to leave the service better than you found it. And I'm sure that's no greater feeling than having a recruit who has now become an officer tell you, hey, I don't know if you know this, but the way you've taught this, that, X, Y, and Z has shaped me and helped me to who I am today.
yeah, and watching him, and he teaches some of those same concepts, and he's in gear doing workouts with his crew every day, and he's become a really great leader. And so it's kind of like, a parent watching their kids grow up. So.
Okay. I'm going to ask you definitely want to talk about a years of service clause for promotion. So, in your opinion, should there be one?
I do think, especially with a department like mine. So we've grown tremendously, but like say when I first started here, I came on with 7 years of experience behind my belt, or have been on the department for 7 years. But we're a small department. We don't run a ton of fires. So you're not really getting, it takes a longer time to get that experience. So, like, say, if I would have got promoted the first time I put in, just because I had been here longer than the person that actually got promoted, I wasn't ready just simply because of the amount of fires I had had under my belt at that time. So, I do think that's important. I think now, are there some people who could come in and make a jam up officer? Absolutely. But do you have that fire experience behind it? So I think that part is important. And I think our department only requires 3 years to get promoted to the lieutenant. And so to me, that's kind of now Savannah Fire, that's probably a good amount of service time because they catch jobs all the time. We're a little less out here to get that experience. So
Right. But the difference, though, is you guys are running two-man engine companies. Like you're having to do more with less, but it's equivalent to the same type of calls. It's just Savannah has the resources to flood the scene, whereas you guys have what's your magic number for staffing, if you know?
For staffing is a 19, so 19 or 20 per shift.
19-20 per shift.
But
And
that's
Savannah has who knows how many more, but you're still having to do the same type of job.
yeah, they'll drop 50 on a scene, we drop 10. Big difference.
And then you account to I've been to Savannah before, but I'm assuming they have probably hydrants. They don't most likely have to do drafting, whereas
Oh, no. No,
you
sir.
guys have water issues and manpower issues, so it's the same thing. But I love how you mentioned that's still not an excuse. You still have to do your job.
Absolutely.
Next topic of mental health and wellness. I think that's very near and dear to you. So I will let you have the floor on this.
It is very near and dear to me, and I think that we don't do a great job of checking on our people and knowing our people. Mental health is one of those things, especially with men. We don't talk about feelings and all that stuff, right? And so I think that my son died tragically, 2022. My department stepped up. They came. They were there. All the things. But then after I came back to work, it's kind of like no one ever checked on me. Not for my department. They just assumed I was good, or they just didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to bring it up because they didn't know if it would get me emotional or whatever. But now, some of my mentors from other departments were checking on me all the time. And David Bullard, Columbia County Fire, he's a lieutenant up there. He'll pop in and, hey, I'm just checking on you, all right? And so he can tell if I post a few things, and then he'll message me. And so, and I have some personal friends, but fire service in general, I think we don't do a good job with that. And I think it's so important to know your people, know when they're having an issue. And you've got to be able to, when they come in the mornings, if they're usually jolly and happy and, you know, and now all of a sudden they're showing up or they're late for work or they're, you know, having some issues, that we've got to be able to recognize that and not just write it off as, well, they're just being an asshole today. That may not be the case. It may be they haven't slept in 8 days, or because I did that. I went 8 days without sleeping and I showed up to work every day. I was on time every day. Should I have been at work? Probably not. But no one ever asked me. But it, you know, you learn to deal with things. And but I do think that training for mental health and try how to recognize things is very important. And I don't think we do enough of it, to be honest with you.
I mean, they're starting to, you have more organizations out there. Next Rung, I mean, the IAFF has programs. Like, there are things out there, and I feel like you're right. Like, there's not, we could do a lot more, but I think back in the day compared to now, there's a little bit more better resources for individuals to reach
Absolutely.
out.
There are a lot of resources out there. And I always tell people, everybody's always, well, hey, call if you need anything. Call me if you need anything. And I can say this from personal experience. No, people aren't going to call. They're not going to call you. Pop in and say, hey, I'm here. Do you need anything? Just checking on you. That's what people need. Not that waiting on them to reach out to you, because most of the time people are not, especially men. So.
I will have to agree with you. We're, and I don't know if it's the way we're wired, but like, we don't, men, I think men firefighters see it like, we are here to help, but when it's time for us to need help, are very reluctant to reach out to an individual. We don't want to bother them. We don't want to pester them. We don't want to feel like a burden to others.
Oh, I agree with that 100%. And I was that way. You know, I was struggling and I didn't reach out. But people would be like, let me know if you need anything. It wasn't like people completely ignored me. I just wasn't going to reach out to them. But had they have, you know, stopped by my house or come to the station, then I probably would have been more apt to, yeah, this is what's going on. Hey, I haven't slept in 8 days, or, you know, whatever. So I think that's important. Learning to recognize that in people, knowing our people. Get to know our people's family, you know. And I know there are a lot of departments that are really family oriented and that kind of stuff. And I think Effingham Fire is, we're growing and becoming more of that, which is wonderful to see the brotherhood that's coming here. The culture is changing in Effingham Fire, and it's super exciting to see that. And I love it. We got guys that almost every shift, everybody's getting in gear and working out, where before only a few people were working out. So, people training, going outside the department for training. So the culture is changing here. It's super exciting. Like I said, I'm really proud of this department. We've come a long, long way.
So this next question I'm going to ask you, and I don't mean it to intend any disrespect, but like, with you being a female, females are nurturing. They actually do care. I'm not saying male officers don't care, but can you tell a difference with the crew that you work with, if like somebody's off? Because guys might see it, but then they might just shrug it off, like, oh, maybe he's having a bad day. But I feel like maybe females see it or sense it differently than we do.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And the guys call me Mama Bear. That's my nickname here. That's what I got on my radio strap. But I do. I kind of mother them, especially we're raising babies here. Like a lot of our young guys are the last 3 years, we have gotten 18 to 25 year olds. And so, you know, that's the bulk of our department now is young guys. And so mentoring them, coaching them up, and like being mama to them. But you're right. I think I do recognize that stuff a little bit better when somebody comes in and they're off, or somebody's late a couple times when they're normally not. And I'll be like, hey, what's going on? You all right? Like, everything good? Everything good at home? And so I think as a female that I probably am a little bit better at recognizing that.
Okay. What would be your advice for any other females looking to come into the fire service? Because I mean, it's obviously it's male dominated, but there are parts of the country where there are a lot more females within a department than others. But what, because I mean, you had no, it's not like you wanted to become a firefighter when you were growing up. It's something that just it just kind of happened with running that call. So what advice could you give to other females out there that are looking to maybe get their foot in the door?
So I was the only female here on the operation side for a long time. We have a couple come in and they leave. So there wasn't anyone else for me to really, especially here, to look at and be like, oh, hey, I want to be like that. So I think that's important to see people like us, or you can go to and get advice. And that goes for anybody. It's important to see people like yourself doing these things. But as far as women goes, you got to put the work in. You got to be, and I hate to say this, but you got to be tough. Like, and the guys will tell you that I'm hard on the female recruits out here, and I do that for a reason, because and I tell them, you the guys are working, you're up working. You need to be up first one to put your hands on stuff, because people are watching us harder than they watch the guys. They're looking for us to fail. They're looking for us to be lazy, and don't give it to them. Don't give it to them. You put the work in. You There's no other way around that. You got to work hard. And so, and then like crying on a fire scene, or I won't say a fire scene, but like in training, the recruits, I had a female out here that would get frustrated and then cry. And I was like, you got to stop that. If you need to cry, you go around the back of the building and we'll do it, but we're not doing that here. Do not do that in front of these guys. You are discrediting yourself. So, the guys even said that to me. Oh, she cries all the time. So let me talk to her. And so I had a conversation with her, and she actually turned out to be a pretty decent little firefighter. So, and she would just get frustrated and with herself. And so, but put the work in, get out there, do the training, work on your physical fitness, because it's no secret that we're not as strong as the guys. We have to do things differently. And that's part of what I like about being a female instructor, is because I can show women how I do things, and how things that work for us don't necessarily work for the guys, or vice versa. The guys will show them a technique and they can't get it, and then here I come and I'll show them like how to hold a nozzle different or something, and it just works. We're stronger in our legs. We don't have the upper body strength that men have. So you have to, it's all about technique.
That's
You
it.
have to, so that's pretty much it right there. Technique, work hard.
And the standards are the standards.
That's right. The standards are the standards. I didn't get any kind of break because I'm a 50-year-old female. I don't get any break. I'm expected to do the exact same things the guys are. And so, and females coming into the fire service is the same thing. They have to work just as hard. Actually, they probably have to work harder, to be honest with you. It takes a little longer to earn that respect, in my opinion, because guys are looking for us to fail. And there are men, there are still some guys out there that don't want us here. And that doesn't bother me. I find that it amuses me. It makes me work harder. So, and I tell people, let that fuel your fire to be successful. I had a battalion chief one time that bullied me. Like, he wouldn't send me to training. He would come into a room and speak to everybody but me. If I came into the room, oh, I gotta leave. And so I just let that drive me to do better, put my head down and put the work in. I failed a CPAT, or physical agility, that we do here. I failed it. I didn't quit. I finished it. It took me 10 minutes, and it pissed him off, and he wrote me off. But my guys here worked with me. Like, even guys off the other shift, we'd meet at the training center. We'd work out, worked on things. I came back and finished the CPAT, the physical agility, in 5 minutes and 2 seconds. I cut my time in half, and that man still couldn't get his respect. He still, because I thought, if I could get better, if I can just get better, if I can just do this, and if I could just be successful at this, it didn't matter. He just kept on hammering me. He sent me to a pump ops class, and he told my lieutenant at the time, I'm only sending her because she's going to fail it. I was the only person out of six people from my department to pass it. That's probably where my love for pump ops came right there.
It fueled it. It fueled it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got to be driven. You got to be tough. Got to have a tough skin and be willing to put the work in.
I love it because I can relate to you in a sense of when you see your own. So like, there's no secret, fire service is male dominated, but it's also white male dominated. So
Absolutely.
like, when I see a brother come in, it's like, okay. And then, like me in my head, I don't tell him this, but it's like, I need you not to fuck up. Like in my head, it's like,
Right.
like where you see one, it's like you gotta earn, you can't come in here trying to be like, hey, I'm here, like I don't have to do anything, because there's bad apples out there, but you don't want to see the hard work that you've put in get tarnished by somebody else who kind of looks like you.
Right.
And I see 100% what you're saying, but I also love the fact that you mentioned we all have haters. I mean, it's terrible that we have haters within our own what we call brotherhood, but when you know someone doesn't like you, it does something to you. It makes you go harder. It makes you grind harder to get to where you need to be. So I love that you shared that.
Yeah, I had somebody ask me one time. It was so bad, even the wives of the firefighters noticed it. Like, why is he so mean to you? And I had someone ask me one time, why don't you just quit if he's that mean to you? I'm like, no, I'm going to win. I'm going to be successful, and I'm still here. So he's no longer even in the fire service, and here I am. So
Right.
problem with the man, he was very, very smart, great at training, and if he didn't like how I performed, then he should have taken me under his wing. Hey, this is the way we do this. We're going to work on this. We're going to get you where you need to be. And he didn't do that. So,
And so, what's your advice for guys who have females coming into the fire service? What would be your advice to them? Because that's new for me, because we have females now, and it was an adjustment period for me where it's like, oh, like automatically think I gotta change the way I am. We can't joke around. But to me, it's you just need to find out what that person can or can't tolerate.
right. So that's a tough question for me because I'm very male-minded, and my guy, she's just one of the guys, and I've been just one time. But don't treat them different. I had a female one time that a guy offered to put the chainsaw back on the rig for, and it totally offended her. The job is the same. Don't treat us differently. If you see us struggling with something, hey, can I help you with that? Let me show you how. Your team is only as strong as the weakest link, right? So
That's
why would
right.
you not want us to be strong or be proficient instead of just writing them off or they don't know how to do this or whatever? So train them, show them the correct ways, and as far as making jokes, I'm probably an HR nightmare. So you got to fill that out, make sure that you're not being offensive to somebody. No one could ever offend me, but that's just how I am, and all women aren't like that. So you just kind of got to feel that out and make sure that you're not, don't get yourself in trouble. Keep things to a minimum if you know someone might be offended by something, and that goes for anybody. You crack a joke and they're like, "Oh my God, I can't believe you said that." So just got to be careful as far as that.
Definitely.
Strengthen your crew up. If make her a part of your crew, strengthen it up. Go from there.
Okay. With you being an adjunct instructor, and you teach your recruits, this is usually a difficult conversation sometimes for the recruiter to the student, but what do you say to an individual who's just not cutting it?
Well, that's a really hard conversation because there are people that we've had come through here that just this just isn't for them. And we've had a couple of guys that have made it through the recruit school that really shouldn't have and got on the floor. And then we've had to be like, and I give everybody every opportunity to be successful. I had a young man who made it through our recruit school who really just shouldn't have, but that's a whole nother conversation. But he was a great kid. He just really struggled. This job wasn't for him. He had some outside issues. He was blind in one eye, so he really couldn't see. And that wasn't really brought forth until after he got on the floor. And so he had been with some other stations, other lieutenants, and they were trying to help him along. And so they sent him to me, and I'm like, we're gonna get this guy trained up. I'm gonna help him out. He's gonna be successful. It was the worst time of my life in the fire service, I think. It was so frustrating, and it just wasn't for him. And so I had to write a really the worst evaluation I've written in my entire career. And it really, and I told the captain, I was like, this really hurts my heart. However, we can't allow this guy to stay here because he's going to either kill himself or kill someone else. And I could not ever live with that. So sometimes we do have to sit down and have those difficult conversations and be like, hey, I don't think this is for you. You're not meeting benchmarks. You're not doing this. You're not doing that. And so, and as a female, that's hard. That hurt my mama heart bad, but it is what it is. We can't allow that in the fire service. This job is too, it's too serious. You know, people's lives are at risk, ours and, you know, the people that we serve. We can't allow someone that just can't cut it to go in.
And unfortunately, every place has the ones that slip through the cracks, that hide in the shadows. And for some, I don't want to say it's like fortunate, but there are some who go their entire career and they skate by. But then there are some who will be called upon and tested. And, you know, like you said, they're a danger to themselves, danger to the crew, danger to the public. But it happens, still happens.
Yeah, and I think sometimes for departments it's, you know, just a number issue. You got to have the numbers, and they kind of let people pass through recruit school that maybe shouldn't have, hoping that maybe they can get them where they need to be, and then it just doesn't happen. So, and you know, we got to do a little bit better job about making sure we're not putting those people on the floor. It doesn't do them any good to be on the job for 6 months and then be like, hey, you're not cutting it.
No, I agree. I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
I definitely would like to be at least get promoted to captain. My time in the fire service is getting short. I'm 19 years in now, so it's much harder than it used to be. It takes a little more work, but I would at least like to make it to captain. I'm kind of doing all the other things that I set out to do. I never ever thought that I would be an instructor, and here I am instructing. I'm teaching for the fire academy sometimes. I teach our recruits out here. I travel all over. So pretty proud of that. I didn't ever think I would do that. So, but yeah, definitely captain, if not battalion chief, depending on how that plays out here.
And I mean, I'm sure never in your wildest dreams did you think, you know, from oncology research, correct?
Yes.
Oncology research to fire lieutenant. It's
Yeah.
just one of those things, like you left one field to come to another, but then you've also seen the shift and the transition from how your department used to be to what it is now and what it continues to be for the future.
Yeah, that's super exciting. I never, like I said, I never even knew any firefighters, and just never had any desire to be a firefighter. I didn't know anything about it. And so, when I took the volunteer fire class, the doctor that I worked for at the time, he's like, "Oh, don't leave me." And I was like, "No, I'm not. I love this job." And I did. And I still, my heart still belongs to oncology. I love it. However, the passion for the fire service just was a little stronger, and it just called me. And it's been a great decision. As much as I miss oncology, this is where God meant for me to be. Losing my son was very difficult, and I still struggle with that. But God has given me all these young guys here that I get to mother and train and be a part of their life. And so that's, I got goosebumps talking about that. But that's just super exciting. So fire service is where I'm supposed to be at, and I love it.
No, I totally 100% get you. I lost my mom 12 years ago and I was in the fire service. But one thing that always stuck out to me is she never liked me getting into it, even though she secretly was the reason, because to graduate high school, I had to do community service hours. And so she asked a friend of hers, what can I do? And she's like, have him go to the fire station. She's like, go to the fire station, go do community service. Without me knowing, I thought I was just signing papers and it was actually application for membership. And
Oh.
like, she hated the fact that I did it. She did not like that I was doing it and I was always there. But that is one thing I can say is during her last moments, the station I was at was in our first due. So like, she would call and she'd be like, hey, I need this. And my captain knew my situation. He was like, let's go. Whatever she needed help getting from one end to the other because my dad also had to work. So, but it was that the fire service had that, it was like my second family. So that captain at the time, anything I needed, he'd be like, take the pickup or you need help, we'll all go. So it's that relationship, because you mentioned how tragically you lost your son, but in a sense, all these younger firefighters that you kind of command over, you're helping them grow and mentor them to be better people. So it just comes back full circle.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's funny how that all works out. So, and that's how I look at it. And that's kind of one of the things that helps me get through is having these young guys in my life and being a part of helping them grow and learn and watching them get promoted. So it kind of fills out that void that I have a little bit.
Right. I mean, never to be replaced. You know, like your son's never replaced, my mother's never replaced, but it just, like you said, it helps, and it helps, you know, put a little bit of that heart back together.
Absolutely. 100%. It's a good way to put it.
Jennifer, I really appreciate you coming on. I know when I asked you, you were like, "What? No." And like, why? But I mean, the things that you're doing, even though not everybody may notice it, but you notice, you know what you're doing, and the people around you are also seeing what you're doing. And I love how you talked about how the fire service has done so much for you. Continue being that leader that, even though nobody may know of, but people within your department know who you are, they know what you're doing. Continue love spreading hazmat drafting. And I just want to say I thank you for seriously for coming on. And it's not easy for people to be like talking about themselves. A lot of people don't want to do that, but you know, I appreciate you taking a chance at coming on and talking shop with me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity. I hope that it inspires somebody somewhere.
Definitely. Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.